Hello and welcome to Paper Trail Pro. In our second podcast, we examine the legacy of General Frank Kitson, the renowned British Army strategist who served as Brigadier in the north of Ireland in the early part of the conflict. To some, he was a war hero, to others, a director of terrorism. My name is Kieran McArch and I work with the charity Paper Trail, which helps victims and survivors, former combatants and families impacted by the latest conflict in the north, access official information buried in archives for decades. On our website, www.papertrail.pro, you will find details of our new project, which offers advocacy support to victims and survivors of the conflict. We help those who may wish to engage with statutory bodies dealing with the legacy of the past. We work with campaigners and legal teams to target and retrieve key archives from public records. This project is supported by the European Union's Peace 4 programme, managed by the Special EU Programmes Body and Victims and Survivors Service. We also offer victims and survivors across the North free legacy archive training so that they too can become Raiders of the Lost Archives. We teach them how to target and access information in public records. We teach them what to look for and how to track it. We also teach them how to record and interview their friends and family ethically and professionally so that they can tell their own story in their own words. We may even publish these stories and experiences if they wish so that they can exist as references for posterity. The opinions and views of this podcast may not reflect the views of the charity or the funders. They're mine and mine alone, so you can take that as a disclaimer. I'm author of the book, The McGurk's Bar Bombing. I'm an activist with the Families Campaign for Truth. My grandmother Kathleen Irvine was one of 15 civilians killed in the McGurk's Bar Massacre of 4th of December 1971. At that time, our grief was compounded as we had to contend with a tidal wave of state disinformation and black propaganda, which blamed the mass murder on the innocent civilians in the bar that night. So at the time that we were burying our loved ones, the state was burying the truth. I discovered that this was quite simply British information policy at the time, and it drew me to the subject of this podcast, General Frank Kitson, and led me to ask, was he a war hero or a director of terrorism? In September 1970, as Britain prepared for a longer conflict, it redeployed Brigadier Frank Kitson, as he was then, to take over 39 Brigade. 10 battalions, including the elite troops of the 1st Battalion of the Parachute Regiment, were under his control in Belfast mainly, but with security over part of the surrounding areas of counties Down and Antrim. Kitson was an able and experienced commander, having served in theatres of war as varied as Kenya, Malaya and Cyprus. He was also a counterinsurgency theorist and practitioner of repute, having honed his skills during his distinguished career. This also included authorship of books on the subject, beginning with Gangs and Counter Gangs in 1960. Kitson became somewhat of a Republican bogeyman, especially after the publication of Low Intensity Operations, Subversion, Insurgency and Peacekeeping, which was first published in 1971 whilst he was a brigadier in Belfast. Or rather, this is how it is portrayed to this day in the press. This portrayal was managed from the start by the information policy units he instigated, and we know this from British archives. To this day, it has blurred his true influence at this crucial juncture of the conflict, and I believe that has stunted scholarly examination of the importance of his tenure, which lasted until early 1972. In-depth interrogation techniques, psychological operations, pseudo-gangs, the murder of civilians by special force units were all instruments of war used by the British military in the streets of Northern Ireland. We know this is fact now, and yet there are many who are still in denial that such counterinsurgency techniques were included within Britain's military strategy, especially against, inverted commas, British subjects. Of course, there was a certain otherness that set these people apart from citizens on the island of Britain. And these techniques were, of course, as old as war itself. What would have made the conflict in the north of Ireland unique was if these techniques had not been deployed here in some form. The bedrock of all these techniques is how information is extracted, handled, developed, and then used against an enemy. If we leave these highly emotive, low-intensity operations to the side momentarily, Kitson's significance is that he realigns information policy to the heart of military operations, and he begins to overhaul military information activity in Northern Ireland straight away. By the end of 1971, Kitson had in place two of the British Army's best information managers. Colonel Marcus Tugwell and Lieutenant Colonel Bernard Renouf Johnson headed up the Army's Information Policy Unit. Tugwell was an authority on counter-revolutionary propaganda, and Johnson was the head of the British Army's Psychological Operations, or PSYOPs, training unit at the Joint Warfare Establishment. Kitson bolstered the British Army's PSYOPs and propaganda machine due to the damaging effects of internment from August 1971 on Britain's national and international stand. Britain was losing the battle for hearts and minds. For counterinsurgency to succeed, as defined by Kitson, every level of the civil, police and military machinery had to be geared towards victory. Now, this was not a new theory imagined by Kitson alone, but British counterinsurgency doctrine that had evolved in the generation after World War II. Tugwell, the colonel in charge of the Information Policy Unit in the early 70s, wrote in his doctoral thesis in 1979, "The peculiar circumstances of Ulster in 1971 posed novel problems for security forces and particularly for the army. British counterinsurgency doctrine, developed and well tried over 25 years, insisted on political primacy in the direction and control of all forms of operation, political, military and psychological, and encouraged close cooperation at all levels of command between administrator, policeman and soldier." When Brigadier Frank Kitson was writing his books on counterinsurgency, he can draw on personal experiences in Malaya, Kenya and Cyprus, and modern military theorists such as B.H. Liddell Hart and Mao Tse-tung. And when he was forming a covert unit around a corps of elite troops in palace barracks in the Easter and summer of 1971, he was simply drawing on thousands of years of military practice. When Kitson was deployed to Belfast in 1970, the conflict had already started. To borrow his methodology, therefore, it had already gone beyond subversion and into the insurgency stage. He considered the Army's primary duty to provide units which are trained, organised and equipped to carry out the sort of operations given to them. So Kitson immediately set about overhauling units he needed. When he arrived in Belfast, he found the Army unfit for the role as it had been rushed in without proper training. This is why he transformed the Information Policy Unit and enlisted experts such as Tugwell and Johnson. At the same time, Kitson also evolved the Covert Military Reaction Force, MRF, around a corps of specialists from Britain's crack secret air service, the SAS and palace barracks. The formation of these units no better exemplify Kitson's focus in the battle for hearts and minds, information and contact. Kitson emphasised simply that the basic idea of collecting background information and developing it into contact information is of the greatest importance. So, for the British Army to defeat the IRA, its units had to gather intelligence, manage it and use it so that they could go toe-to-toe with their adversary in battle. I believe that Kitson's true influence on the blueprints for war in the north of Ireland at this time has not been adequately researched for the historical record. It's an area where most journalists and academics fear to tread. The reason for this is twofold. Firstly, as it was Republicans who immediately recognised Kitson's true value and expertise, read his books and attempted to publicise the practice of his theories, the authorities could easily dismiss their views as propaganda. Secondly, sections of society were unwilling to accept that the British military would use the same dark arts of PSYOPs or pseudo-gangs against so-called British citizens that they had used against the likes of the Malayan Chinese or the Kikuyu in Kenya. This may be based on the view that the British perceive Irish Catholics differently from other tribes, as they usually spoke the same language and were white. But this ignores history first and foremost, as Kitson himself reminds us in Low Intensity Operations, which he published in 1971. He wrote, "In the historical context, it may be of interest to recall that when regular army was raised in the 17th century, suppression of the Irish was coupled with defence of the realm as one of the two main reasons for its existence. Furthermore, the British Army was, and is, despite serious failings in the Middle East today, one of the most professional fighting forces in the world, whose soldiers will fight who they are told to fight. There was a war to be won in the north of Ireland, and we could be assured that the British Army tried to win that war with whatever it could use from its armoury. Finally, the Irish Catholic community were not perceived as having been fully assimilated, even though they were supposed to be British citizens. Irish Catholics were viewed as being apart from the state, Indeed, the same sections of society may still find it hard to believe that these tools of war have been standard operating procedure for centuries and are being used today by Western forces in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, and Iran. We now know, of course, that PSYOPs, control of armed militia, and extra-legal assassination were indeed deployed here by the state. So we're slowly moving towards a juncture that we can begin a mature debate about the practices of British military theory on the streets of Belfast and beyond. I think it is only fitting that future generations record the true influence that globally renowned military theoreticians and practitioners such as Frank Kitson, Maurice Tugwell, Bernard Renouf Johnson and their ilk had here. Kitson's real legacy is that he institutionalised the coordination of effort on each and every front. The use of PSYOPs, including black propaganda and death squads, are sideshows within counterinsurgency theory in the battle for hearts and minds. Kitson's real legacy is that he institutionalised the coordination of effort on each and every front. He understood that no single initiative, social, political, psychological, economic or military, would succeed in isolation. Rather, the government of the day would have to deploy a combination of them all in order to succeed. The cursory lesson was that once a goal was made policy, i.e. the defeat of the IRA, each programme had to complement the others in working towards that single objective. On the ground, in the north of Ireland, this meant that the British Army, Royal Ulster Constabulary, civil authorities and judiciary had to coordinate their efforts in unison. Information policy bound them all, and this is why control of the media was, and is, so important. It's also why the cover-up in the aftermath of the McGurk's Bar massacre was all-enveloping and successful as far as the British state was concerned. Thank you for joining Paper Trail Pro. Our next podcast is part two in our examination of the Kitson experiment and examines his deployment of a clandestine special force unit called the Military Reaction Force, which is now known to have killed and injured dozens of civilians in the early 70s. Indeed, the British use of counter gangs is causing the most difficulties for the British state at the moment, as the legacy of its death squads feature in leading Article 2 court cases working their way slowly through the courts today. Thank you. Goodbye.